Mr. Steenberg.
Good morning. Say that the B'tit Sheva Rebbe once, on the night of Rosh Hashanah, started looking underneath the benches in his shul. So they asked him, "What are you doing?" So he said, "They all know that when the goyim come to their new year, they all get drunk and start rolling underneath the benches. So now it's our new year, so I'm looking to see for all the shikas, for all the shikarim, to see if there's any underneath any of the benches." And of course there is, it was a teddy. And they say, "B'shib da'apta rov," that what happened, that he used to say that by the time the goyim come to their new year, we are zeicha bedin, just in contrast of their behavior. It's a wonderful feeling to come cold wintry morning to see people come together to hear a shir, while the rest of the world spend their time looking to see how they can get more drunk, how they can have a better holiday. We're all now being zeicha bedin, so it's a tremendous chus. One of the things I try to do is to see if there's any interesting Ma'am Mekribus that people can have a chance to look at over Shabbos. And there's a fascinating Chasm Sefer in this week's Parsha. I'll just introduce it. Yosef reveals himself to the brothers. And he says, you should see, Kipi Amidabe Aleichem, the mouth that speaks to you is Yosef. And Rashi brings the Pshat, that Yosef said to the brothers, "See, I speak in Lashon HaKodesh, so I must be your brother." The Ramban gets very upset. What kind of proof is it that it's Yosef just because he speaks Lashon HaKodesh? At the end of the day, he asks many questions, but the gist of the questions are that surely there will be many people who came from Eretz Yisrael to Kanaan, to Mitzrayim, it's not so far away from each other. And there must have been many people that spoke Lashon HaKodesh. The fact that he spoke Lashon HaKodesh seems to be of hardly any proof whatsoever that it is Yosef. This is the Ramban. He asks this question in many different ways, but this is his main question. And the Chasam Sefer over here goes at great length to talk about what is Lashon HaKodesh. In fact, the Ramban himself, in a number of places, describes what is Lashon HaKodesh. The Rambam in Meir Nevuchim says, why is Lashon HaKodesh called Lashon HaKodesh? He says the Rambam, because there are no dirty words in Lashon HaKodesh. The Rambam uses the Lashon, the evil that comes to Tashmish, and other things. There are no words that describe the actual mahus, the actual act. It's only words that go around it, to remiss to it. It's called Lashon HaKodesh because it's a language which is completely clean. The Ramban also argues on this Rambam in Meir Nevuchim. He says there are words in Lashon HaKodesh which mean almost the same thing, and therefore that's not why it's called Lashon HaKodesh. The Ramban says it's called Lashon HaKodesh because it's the Lashon which HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Klal Yisrael in. It's the Lashon that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov spoke in. Lashon HaKodesh is the Lashon of Kedoshim speak in. Lashon HaKodesh, the Lashon that those who are holy speak in. As a side point, the Peleyotz writes that the school of Lashon HaKodesh is very, very great, and those that can should never speak anything but Lashon HaKodesh. Okay. So we have two explanations so far why it's called Lashon HaKodesh: the Rambam and the Ramban. The Chasam Sefer, this week's parasha, is what I wanted to mention. He goes into tremendous length. The Lashon HaKodesh is a whole new language, and it has nothing to do with Ivrit and Lashon Eva. Ivrit comes from Lashon Eva, from Eva Anor. And he's very marich about this point. He says that the whole idea of gematrius and atbash, that you can change letters, gematrius of letters, doesn't exist in any other language. Lashon HaKodesh is a unique language which, if a person himself is not Kodesh, he will never be Zeichet to speak it. He brings many proofs. One of the very interesting things that the beginning of Sanhedrin talks about is that the Lashon HaKodesh was forgotten very, very quickly during Binyan Bayis Sheni. You see already in Daniel itself, how most of Daniel is in Aramaic. Why did it suddenly get forgotten so quickly? He says, because Klal Yisrael had to work to be Zeicha to Lashon HaKodesh. And when they lose the level of Kedusha, they lost it. And it goes on that people make a mistake and they think that it has episode Shaychas to Evis, to Evit. It's got no Shaychas whatsoever, it's a whole new language. He says that Lashon HaKodesh is that's why Yosef, when he spoke to the brothers, he says, "Kepia medabe aleichem," that I speak in Lashon HaKodesh. That and says Rashi, the Rabban's tied on him. The Rashi says it's a proof that it's me, Yosef, because I can speak Lashon HaKodesh. Asks the Rabban, there must be tens of thousands of people who spoke Lashon HaKodesh, because they all came from all the descendants of Avo spoke Lashon Ivri. Says the Chasam Sofer, there's no connection. It's a separate language altogether. It's brought down the Shem, the Vdesla, a very deep in the Kudda, just say very Bekitza, but the idea is that the Malbim was spent a lot of time in his life explaining that many words in the Torah seem to be synonymous with each other, but in reality they're completely different. Right? Many times we've got, we say, Halel v'zimor, all these words, each word has a separate understanding and a separate meaning completely. If you look, the Malbim in Yeshaya is very, very much in his Akdoma, that it's a big mistake to think that ever there's a word repeated. There's no word which is identical to another word. The Akdoma of Yeshaya has got 5-6 pages, just this Nekuda. So Vdesla says like this, in languages, there are two common words that we use, Sofo and Loshon. It says by the Afloga, they were all Sofo Achas. Sofo means a language. And Loshon, like we say, Loshon HaKodesh. So what is the difference between the words Sofo and Loshon? It says Sofo literally comes from words for sign, lips. Loshon comes from the tongue. The lips on the outside, and the Loshon is much deeper in, it's inside the mouth. Sofo is the superficial understanding of the language, and Loshon is a deeper understanding. So he said, by Dei Aflogel Loshon, it says Sofo Achas. They all had a similar Sofo, but they didn't all know Loshon HaKodesh. They all knew the Sofo of Kodesh, but they did not know the Loshon HaKodesh. It is interesting that we've had, I think Rafaleski said it, that we had three tremendous gifts that we got. Loshon HaKodesh, Eretz Yisrael, and the Navi, Nevi'im. And between the before with our scholar, the Zionists, we've had to, so to speak, almost like switch off these gifts, because each one of them was overtaken by somebody who did not want us to keep mitzvahs as a way to keep us away from mitzvahs. But we mustn't forget, the Kuzri himself, in the Sefer Kuzri, talks about the greatness of Lashon HaKodesh, how powerful it is. It's interesting to look at the Chasam Sofer, this week's parsha, that's what I wanted to say. The Chasam Sofer goes into the Nekuda that Lashon HaKodesh is a very, very important language, and we should have a new appreciation of it. One of the things Chasam Sofer says, as we mentioned already, is that the whole idea of gematrias, the whole idea of changing letters and everything with it, is something unique to Lashon HaKodesh. I saw a chidor this week's parsha, an unbelievable chidor. Some people really like gematrias, but this gematrias is unique. The Rashi tells us that what happened was that Yosef sent a present to his father Yaakov. Sholach kazois. What did he send him? Yain yoshon shadas zekenim noicha imenu, old wine that old people like, and some say glisin shall pull, split beans. Agav, why do old people like old wine? The idea is that most things deteriorate as they get older, and therefore elderly people get upset when they see them, because it reminds them of their own situation. But wine improves with old age. So when elderly people see old wine, they are happy, because it reminds them that certain things improve, and they too hope to improve in old age. So Rashi says that Yosef sent to him Yain Yoshon Shadas Kedim Noicha Imenu, and some say Grisin Shalpur. How many years Did Avram get told that Klal Yisrael will be in Mitzrayim? End of Parshas Boy, it says 430 years. 430. Zekedim often means grandfathers. Zokin can sometimes mean a grandfather. Yain Yoshon is exactly the gematria of 430. So Yosef sent to Yaakov, Yain Yoshon, which is 430, Shadar Zekedim, which the elders means by grandfather, Noichai Menu, he agreed to it. He agreed to 430. But Yosef also sent him Grisen Shel Pul. Pul is a gematria 116. How many years of actual Shibud was there? So the vort is like this. Rashi tells us until the end of all the Shvatim died, there wasn't any real Shibud. That means until all the Shvatim died, they never suffered. Klal Yisrael went Mitzrayim for 210 years. Levi was the last one of all the brothers to die. How old was Levi when he died? 137. How old was Levi when he came down to Mitzrayim? It doesn't say before. It says that Yosef was 39. If you work it out, that between Yosef and Reuven, there were only 6 years. You can work it out in Pasha's, what happened was, he married Rachel and Leah the same week, 1 week after the next, and then within the next 7 years, he had all the Shvatim except for Binyamin, and Reuven was born after 9 months, because there were 6 years between them. Between Reuven and Levi, there were 2 years presumably, so it was 4 years between Yosef and Levi, which means that Levi was 43 when he came down to Mitzrayim, and he lived there till he was 137, which is 94 years. So it comes out that Levi lived 94 years in Mitzrayim. If you deduct 94 from 210, it means that Klal Yisrael suffered in Mitzrayim 116 years, which is Grisin Shel Pul. The gematria of Pul is 116. Grisin means split. That means he said to Yaakov as follows, Daz Kedim Noichai Menu is 430, but it's going to be split, and it's only actually going to be 116. It's a murder kagamati if you look in the words. It's a tremendous thing that, I mean, this is the idea of what the Chasam Sefer says, the concept of Lashon HaKodesh is a whole new depth of a language. It's not stam another language, it's a whole creation. Agav has another gematria, those who like it, is that at the end of the parasha it says that Vayoachamishis leParo, the Paro will get a fifth. Christ was supposed to suffer 430 years, and they had a fifth, which was 86, from Miriam. Miriam was called Miriam Bitter, till they came out to Mitzrayim was 86. Miriam was 86, which came out to Mitzrayim, so a fifth of 430 is 86. Okay, so that's with the Santa gematrias. There was a vort I used to hear by Yaakov. I was there almost 3 years. Moshe Shmuel Shapiro used to say this vort almost every year. The famous pasuk we say to the Shul Shel Yoim on Mondays, Kine Amalochim Noyadu Obu Yachtov Hebevo came to Mol, says the Medrash in this week's parash, the Medrash Rabbah, Kine Amalochim Noyadu, the kings have met. Which are the two kings? Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef was the king of Mitzrayim, Yehuda was the king of Klal Yisrael. Noyadu, they met together, Avu Yachtov, they were walked together, and they said, Nivalu Nechpozu, everybody got very scared and wondered, why did everybody get so scared? If you look in the Medrash, all the different events that happened, people threw, that Yosef threw up a stone, many different stories of the power they each showed each other, and everybody trembled. Why does the Pasuk carries on? Radu. Everybody got terrified from this tremendous meeting of the two kings, Yosef and Yehuda. And the obvious question is, why over here is Yehuda described as a king? After all, here he was somebody coming and pleading with Yosef, please take me as a slave. He had almost nothing to stand on. He had been caught out that his brother had stolen and therefore should be taken into as a slave. And the best he could hope for was that Yosef would listen to him and agree to take him as a slave. And just over here, when he's begging for Usa's life, and he's got no power whatsoever, the Pasuk describes his meeting with Yosef, the kings have met together. Which kind of kings are they? And he used to say as follows, that a king is the way that a person behaves. It's not so much as what other people say about a person. If a person wants to be beemes a king, it's the way he behaves if he sees himself as a king. If he takes responsibility like a king. There are many people who come from royalty family, and you see their behavior and you realize that it's like a title that they have, but they don't deserve, they've got no connection to it. Yehuda over here, you could have given up, everything's gone wrong, but he doesn't. Vayigash, he stands up to fight for what he can, to behave in a way. And you see this in many different ways. When Yehuda was in the pit, and he sees the Sar Mashkin and Sar Ephraim looking unhappy. Could have ignored them. I've got my own things to worry about. I need to worry about other people's sorrows. But he doesn't. He looks out for them to help them. It's a tremendous anhaga. We have this in Koheles, where Shlomo HaMelech says that he was a king over what was initially Mikol HaMoli. What did he have left over? And some say he only had a stick. He was a king over a stick. Molach al Makro, the Gemara in Gittin says. He was a king over a stick. It was an anahoga. This is what I have. I'm going to behave as a king over this as well. It was a vort which Moshe Shmuel used to say, and it was a vort which was very applicable to him. His behavior was always, even the times when the yeshiva wasn't doing well, there were tkufas where the yeshiva was less than 20 boys. You'd imagine in such a case that there's a certain behavior that a person behaves when he's standing in front of a large yeshiva, a big audience, and we're sitting in the Beis HaMedrash and only a few boys, but there's only 20 in the yeshiva. You can imagine sometimes the Beis HaMedrash was only 5 or 6. But his behavior was always one of malchus. A gabbai of his once told me an interesting story. I don't know if you like it, but I found it interesting. Once he was walking with him at the Rosh Hashiva, and they were coming home. So when it was about a minute away from his house, the gabbai took out the keys for the front door. We do that many times. It's in order that he shouldn't have to waste time when he gets to the front door to find the right key for him to open the door. And when Shmuel said to him, that's not good behavior. It's behilus. Because at the end of the day, if now you're thinking about what you need to do in a minute's time, so then you can end up thinking, what about you to do tomorrow? And you're not concentrating what you're doing at the moment. It's a very subtle point, but there's a lot of truth to it. And Malchus is when a person realizes I'm in charge, I have to look after, I behave like a king. You want to see the queen, or maybe you would, or you want to see an important king about to come to his house and taking out his keys a minute before. Now he's behaving with a certain Malchus. And it's a murder kavod. Yehuda over here was begging to be a slave. But after all, he's considered to be a king because of his responsibility that he had. Derech Agav is a Modek of Rekeach, one of the Kadmonim, the Rekeach. He says as follows, that when we do Shmoneh Esrei, when we daven Shmoneh Esrei, we always take 3 steps forward. He says, in the whole of Tanakh, the word Vayigash appears 3 times. Once in this week's parash, Vayigash Elov Yehuda, and once by Avom Avinu, when he daven for Stone Va'amoiva, and once for Liyor Bahar Karmel, when he wanted to uproot and dissolve from the whole of Klal Yisrael, he did a tremendous nissim. But Yigash is 3 times. So because of that, we take 3 steps forward. And he says, it's a Modei Hargosha, if a person's got time to think about it, that one has to imagine in his mind all the different emotions that went through all these 3 people. The Hargosha of Pachad, of awe, Of how much they begged. Think about Yehuda, how much heart he felt that he needs to beg for his life over here. That Rob is still, all the different halgoshes that these 3 people had when they took 1 step forward. So when we take our 3 steps forward, we should think of all these 3 vayigash, and this is how we should approach our Shmoneh Esrei. Vayigash?
In the Torah,
it says what's the word vayigash there? Are you sure it says it?
Yeah.
Why Esav with Yaakov? It's interesting. He says it 3 times. Maybe 3 times by Tefillah. Maybe 3 times by Tefillah. Let me just check. What the Tildos? Yitzchak with Yaakov. Maybe by Tefillah. Maybe 3 times by Tefillah. The Meshech Chochmah says a vort in this week's parasha which Becheskel Sana used to say over every year. He said this word to the Meshech Chochma gives Bechizuk all the time. And each person will get from it what he can. It says over here like this, that when Yaakov was coming down to Mitzrayim, it says, Vayyobe Elikim Yisod, Bamarois Halaylo, Hashem spoke to him in the visions of the night, Vayyobe Yaakov, Yaakov, Vayyobe Hideini. So Meshech Chochma points out that this expression, Bamarois Halaylo, in the visions of the night, doesn't exist by any of the others except for Yaakov. What does it mean, Bamarois Halaylo? He showed him the visions of the night. Meshech Chochma says that Yaakov over here was starting Golos. He was leaving Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Chazal talked about the Koyach, that the Vuh exists be'etzem in Eretz Yisrael, except for those who had the Vuh already in Eretz Yisrael. So Yaakov was going down into what we'd call the depths of the night. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him, b'maris halaylo, that even in the darkest night, you should be aware that I'm still there, you should still be able to see me. And that's why the Lashon of b'maris halaylo existed only with Yaakov, as Yaakov was the only one who started to go down into Golos. He says, it's Shredder's Chizuk that the person has to be aware that even when we're going into Golos, as we are in Golos, the person has to be aware that B'maris HaLaylo, HaKshmuch appears to the person in the Maris of the night. Chesed Sana added to this word that we say in Danin, Yanucha Hashem B'yom Tzor, Yesagevcho Sheim Eloike Yaakov. The name of the gods of Yaakov, he will give you, Yesagevcho will give you strength. Why the God of Yaakov, Eloike Yaakov? Because he was the one who spoke to Yaakov and Maris Halaylov. Because he spoke to him that even when you're going into Golos of the night, Yisagevcha will give you strength by saying to you that don't think that I've given up on you, but Maris Halaylov, I'm still there to watch over you. There's a very basic word from Victor Miller. He speaks about it a few places, but he says it's a big mahalach in Avoida. When Yaakov's family come down to Mitzrayim, Yosef tells Paro, my family, my brothers have come down to Mitzrayim. And what do they do? What's their profession? They're Roye Tzoyin, they're shepherds. And as the Targum Rashi tells us, this was the most despicable kind of work for the Mitzvah. And some women say they served the sheep as a way to sow, and those who are shepherds would look after sheep and always make panos out of them. So this was the most upsetting and irritating kind of job that the Pari could ever imagine. And the reason was, Yosef said to his brothers, in order that we should keep away from Pari, he should put us far away, he shouldn't take us into his own army, into his own kingdom, he shouldn't take a part of the kingdom, we should be far away. He said, you see over here that Yosef was able to stand up, even though he knew his brothers had tremendous krichas, they were warriors of the most strength, the strongest people we could imagine. And they could have taken any job, and they could have shown off their pride and the success of who they could be. They preferred to find something which the goyim would look down upon them as unsuccessful people, as nebuchs, rather than to take the limelight and to get covered from the goyim. A yid in Golos, he says, has to understand that we're not there in Golos to show how brilliant we are and how successful we are. On the contrary, we look for ways that the goyim shouldn't see us as successful. And he says the koyach came always from the fact that a yid had such gaiva and such pride in the fact that he was chiluk of Am Yisrael that he never needed the goy to acknowledge his greatness. It didn't matter if the goy thought of him nothing. The main thing is that he knew he was chiluk of Am Hashem. He says, unfortunately, what's happened is, with recent groups of Klal Yisrael, they wanted to show themselves as being important in the eyes of the goyim. And that has become because they do not have the pride that they are part of Klal Yisrael. The person that has a pride that is part of Klal Yisrael, he doesn't need to get pride from the goyim. And he describes that this is a tremendous avoid that the yid has to have. It's interesting that the Pasuk describes Rashi when he points out the question. It says, Aboyim Mitzrayimo, those who are coming to Mitzrayim. And Rashi asks the question, not coming to Mitzrayim, they already arrived in Mitzrayim thousands of years ago. The Pasuk is using present tense for something that happened a very, very long time ago. And he says the answer is because Aboy Mitzrayim, or because they always understood themselves as people just about coming into Mitzrayim. We're not part of Mitzrayim. We never felt a need to be part of the Mitzrayim. Obviously, a person has to have the seichel to know how to behave. Sometimes this is a baila that the goyim should appreciate, that we work hard and that we show that we care about the countries that we live in. But the word that we don't need their pride, we don't need their recognition, because we have the recognition of who we are as Yidden. That is the message, he says, that we see for the very first time that the brothers came down to Mitzrayim, where they could have got pride and they didn't. And it's a message right through Golus. I want to be, actually, I want to say one more interesting thing on the parsha. Is the Emissary Yaakov points out that the order of the parshas are a bit very strange. If you look, it's quite an obvious question. Is that what happens is like this. That when Yaakov gave down to Mitzrayim, the famine stopped. He gave a bracha, as he says to Paroi, that the Nilus, the Nile, would come up to him. And then the famine stopped completely. After that, the Torah then describes all what Yosef did during the 2 years of famine before Yaakov came down to him. The end of this week's parsha actually occurs before the beginning of this week's parsha. Right? That's a fact. If you look at it carefully, Rashi, Sukkim. And the obvious question is, why is it? Why is it that the prophet described, what did Yosef do? He bought all the land, he moved everything from place to place, he made them all do vismila, and also what he did was, is he gave that, he made a law that one-fifth of the, everybody had a tax of 20%, everybody had to give a fifth to Paroi, except for the Kohanim, the priests. They were free, they got food from Paroi, whatever happens, it became a law in the land that they get their portion. So the Emissary Yaakov directly says that the message is, that's not his other one who says this, is that that Yosef over here was doing everything only to help Klal Yisrael in Golus. Klal Yisrael were coming to Golus of Mitzrayim, he wanted to ensure their survival, he wanted to ensure that they would remain and that's why he set everything up, that they shouldn't get mevuza, he made everybody move from place to place, that it should be difficult for them to do vismila, in order that they should, that they should be easier for them to do vismila. And finally he set up a system where the Kohanim get for them themselves a portion. In fact, that is why Shevet Levi were never part of the Shibbut. Shevet Levi were the ones that were remained, because it became a choik in the land that those who serve a god are free from all taxes and they get a portion of food from Pai, whatever happens. And in fact, Shevet Levi were not nichshal in the Egel at all, none of them. They were not nichshal in the Meraglim. And even many years later, when Aaron dies and Kaisal said, let's go back to Mitzrayim, Shevet Levi came and forced them not. And they brought them back. The survival of Klal Yisrael was based on the fact that Yosef was able to establish that the Kohanim, meaning Shevet Levi, get a chayk from power, whatever happens. That was what ensured the survival of Klal Yisrael. Otherwise, in all those three different situations, Klal Yisrael would have been lost. You see what Yosef's koyach was, and that's why at the end of the parasha, after Klal Yisrael came down to Mitzrayim, you want to know how did they survive? The answer was with the chayk lekoyanim, which is what the pasuk is ma'arech about the most. That's what ensured the survival of Klal Yisrael. Again, it's an important message. The person's got the chashivos. All the things that Yosef did never worked in the end. The mila was lost, and the moving and the help didn't help them. It seems still hated them. But the chayk lekoyanim, that helped Klal Yisrael survive. It's the koylilim. And those are the Shevet Levi that helped the future of Klal Yisrael.
Time of Esther,
they didn't want to come off. Yes. Yeah, that's a fella. I just want to say it's this Friday, short Friday, because this show says Sin Shah Shirim. And also,
how does that explain
the order? Oh, that's what I said, we had to say it properly enough. That what happened was, after they came down to Mitzrayim, so then the pasuk describes what Yosef did, because all what Yosef did was only because he wanted them to survive in Mitzrayim. Had the pasuk said it in the right order, you would have thought he did it. The Kaiser came to Mitzrayim, you would have connected that it was because of that. Because they came down to Mitzrayim, that's why it was necessary for him to do all of that, and that's what the pasuk describes it afterwards. The Haftarah in this week's parasha tells us that before Mashiach comes, he'll take Eitz Yosef and Eitz Yehuda and put them together. There'll be no more machloikus. When machloikus is eradicated from Klal Yisrael, that's the first step of Mashiach coming. It's a merdeka hargosh that we have to think about, that only when machloikus is finished can Mashiach come. And there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim which describes the events after Chanukah. We're now holding after Chanukah. Those who've learned history, I remember the first time I heard about it, I was very, very upset about it. I don't know how much you know of it, but it's very upsetting, is that what happened was, after the story of Hanukkah, the actual physical success, not about the spiritual success, the actual kingdom of the Hashmonaim was shambles. They hardly ever actually had success. And the main reason was Machlokes. And Rashi and Sheh Hashim says this. But before I say Rashi, I just want to bring the Pasuk. First of all, a beautiful medrash for the time. I think we've got time. The Pasuk says like this. It's the end of Perek Vav. Lo yodati nafshi, I did not know myself. I did not look after myself. Somasti, I was placed, Barakavos, in the chariots of Amin Odiv, of a nation of nobles. I have to say the medrash first. Maybe we'll go to Rashi afterwards. The medrash says, Tony Rav Chia, there was once a princess, and she was working in the fields with all the poor people. Can you imagine a princess working very hard in all the fields, collecting bits of grain? And the king saw her and recognized her. And the king took her onto his chariot, and he clothed her, and he gave her all nice, because she was wearing rags. And he looked after her, and he made her the princess of the land. And the next day, says the Medrash, that what happened was, she's riding with the king, and they all say to her, yesterday, Esmele Ismele Katis Bishipolin, Rishvolim, now you're sitting next to the king. And she says, Leodati Nafsha, I also never knew. She had forgotten that she was a princess. And what happened was, just like you are surprised, she says, I'm also surprised. And that's how it would be this man of the Gola. Leodati Nafsha, I did not know myself. Nafsha could also be, I did not know my Krichas of the Nefesh. I didn't have that ability, the knowledge, that is called self-esteem. I didn't have the appreciation of who I was, and therefore I was surprised when Somasti, when they made me, Markvus Abid Odiv, in the chariots of the noble people. So I made a message of what the Kriach Mashiach would be like, that suddenly we will get a whole new appreciation of how great we were. This is what we talked about earlier. And suddenly we'll get a shock, like this princess. If you think about the Medrash carries on, the same thing happened to David HaMelech, the same thing happened to Mordechai HaTzadik, the same thing will happen to Christ of Mashiach, the same thing happened to Yosef HaTzadik, as suddenly they got a new shock of who they were. That is, the Medrash is Mahalach in that Pasuk. But Rashi says like this, he says that what happened was, that there was Machlokes between the grandchildren of the Hashmonaim, Hulkudus and Aristobulus. And what they did was, they brought the Romans to help them settle the fight. And the Romans then took over. And once the Romans took over, they both became slaves. Very, very upsetting how much damage the Machlokes caused. It's unbelievable to think about. The grandchildren of the Hashmonaim themselves got into a fight. And once they got into a fight, they weren't able to settle it. The constant civil war. And then eventually they brought the Romans in. Leodati Nafshi, I did not know to look after myself. Somasti, so what did they do? They made me Malkavos as the one who has to be the rider, means the horse, of Amin Odiv, of another nation. Chrysor became the slaves of other nations because they got into Machlokes and they weren't able to settle it themselves and they asked other people to help. It's a very important message about the Kedusha of Machlokes. I once heard a moshel from a Motcha Neugas Shalom. It made a very strong impression on me. He said, sweet Moshe, he says there were once two mice, and they found a big slab of cheese. Can you imagine? Big slab of it, was like winning the lottery. They were very, very excited, found it together, so what did they have to do? Split it, so they broke it in half. Everybody said, George, we know what the next thing that happened was. There was a big fight. One piece is bigger than the other. Huge fight between the two mice, what should they do? One piece is bigger. So what? Eventually, there's an evil, sly fox, Shua, that comes past. He sees them fighting. He says, I'll help you. I care so much about you. What's the problem? And they tell him. And he says, okay, I've got a simple solution. I'll take a bite of the bigger one. And then you'll have equal pieces. And if you think about the psychology of what a fight is, the main thing is that you don't get more than me. You can understand that eventually they agree to it and be that the other one doesn't get more. So let the fox have the extra bite. And what does he do? He takes a good geschmacker bite until the bigger piece is now smaller than the other piece. And now once again they're fighting and the fox says, oh, I don't want to see you fighting like this, let me help you. You know what I'll do, I'll bite from the other piece now, make that one equal. And so to speak, he keeps biting and biting until all that's left is crumbs. And when there's nothing left to fight about, he says, now you can just share out the crumbs, and he leaves them to it. It's a very powerful parasha about what Machlokes does. And we see that's the after of this week's parasha. Yosef and Yehuda, we don't understand what was going on there in Machlokes. And that's how Rashi explains in the Pasuk that he says that Malchus Beis Chashmonoi Hoknus Vasibulus, they bought Malchus Roimi, Benasa Loi Eved. I became the schlepper for the goyim. That means they had the powerful kingdom of Chashmonoim. And some of you might know the Gemara in Bava Basra, that the end of it was not a single member of Beis Chashmonoi survived. There's not a single person left alive for Chashmonoim. Why? Because of this machloikas. Because they weakened each other so much with machloikas. So there was only crumbs, there was only a few Chashmonoim left alive, so Hodus was able to kill out the last remnants. But where did it start from? Was from the Machlokes. And that's how it became Leodati Nafshi, so Master Markwe Sabi Lodiv. That's better what happened after the story of Chadakah. It's a very, and that's the message of the after. We should be Zeicher, never ever to get involved in Machlokes, and to be Zeicher then, to be after your Tzedek, maybe
Amen. What they doomed anyway without Machlokes? Yeah.